Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Question, is it playing Kim Jong-un's game of threats or remember mutual assured destruction from the Cold War? Would we call this commentary from Donald Trump, our president, the rhetoric of assured destruction? Listen.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
You've no doubt heard this dire warning by now. Kim Jong-un certainly heard it. North Korea's army responded, saying it was, quote, carefully examining the operational plan for making an enveloping fire at the areas around Guam with medium to long-range strategic ballistic rockets. How should Americans feel about all this? Well, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was asked that on Guam during a stop there today.
I think Americans should sleep well at night, have no concerns about this particular rhetoric of the last few days. I think the president, again, as commander-in-chief, I think he felt it necessary to issue a very strong statement directly to North Korea. But I think what the president was just reaffirming is the United States has the capability to fully defend itself from any attack and defend our allies, and we will do so. And so the American people should sleep well at night.
We should note Guam has been a U.S. military asset since World War II, and in an eerie confluence of history, Donald Trump's warning comes almost exactly 72 years after the nuclear attacks on Japan that were launched from Tinian, which is part of the Mariana Island territory in the Pacific that includes Guam. Some voices from Guam will think about then and now for us in just a moment, but Joel Witt, senior fellow at the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University, is back with us. Joel, you predicted on this program last time an escalation of the trading rhetoric from North Korea and the White House. I guess you've got it now. What do you say?
Well, what I say is this is perfectly predictable. The administration has not been moving quick enough to deal with this problem. And as a result, the North Koreans are moving forward with very threatening programs. And we need to really have a sense of urgency about dealing with this issue that goes beyond threatening rhetoric.
So does North Korea have the momentum, have the upper hand at this point, rhetorically and, I guess, tactically at this point?
Yes, I would say they do have the upper hand, and they've had it for months now. The point is, regardless of U.S. sanctions and U.N. sanctions, regardless of President Trump's threats, and regardless of the occasional movement of U.S. military forces to the peninsula, North Korea's programs continue to move forward. And the issue still is, what are we going to do about it?
On your website, 38north.org, what are people saying? Are we in a new territory? Are we looking at an episode of rhetorical kind of peak to be followed by a valley?
Well, you know, we have a lot of technical analysis about their missile and nuclear programs. And I think the point there is that this has been a steadily mounting threat that's been going on for years. And now it's reaching a point where it's actually threatening the United States. And this was entirely predictable months and years ago. And secondly, in terms of the threatening rhetoric, you know, from my perspective at least, what North Korea is doing is just standard operating procedure. They're amping up the threats a little bit because of what President Trump is saying. But this is nothing new. North Korea threatens the United States constantly in its official media. So I think we need to calm down a little bit while recognizing this is an urgent problem.
Let's look at the urgency part. Would you buy the Washington Post's story that suggests that intelligence within the Trump administration, that even goes back to the Obama years, would give the North Koreans the capability of missile-ready nuclear devices?
Well, that's a good question. And of course, none of us knows for sure, even the U.S. intelligence community. What I would point out is that the Washington Post story is based on an estimate by the Defense Intelligence Agency, which typically is very alarmist about foreign threats.
And doesn't have a great track record here.
Doesn't have a great track record. And the point here is that the U.S. intelligence community is made up of a number of different agencies who regularly get together, you know, they discuss issues and come to some common conclusion. So I don't know what the common conclusion is. But having said all that, this is a very dangerous situation, and we need to focus on dealing with it in a practical way.
Donald Trump tweeted this morning that the United States nuclear arsenal was one of the first things he addressed coming into office, and that now it's more powerful than ever. I have a little bit of doubt that such a change could happen overnight in the way that he describes it. But it begs the question, do people use North Korea to essentially compel policy changes, to basically get more money put into nuclear modernization, for instance, independent of whether there's an actual threat going on in the Pacific?
Well, I think the North Korean threat is particularly important for those who advocate building up missile defenses, both in the region and the defenses of the United States. Beyond that, even today, we have sufficient nuclear firepower to destroy North Korea. I mean, we don't need modernization just to do that. So I think the modernization program is more aimed at countries like Russia and China, who are also building up their nuclear forces.
You mentioned the anti-missile capability. Bill Cohen, the former Secretary of Defense, said today that what needs to happen is a comprehensive and staged effort to install anti-missile systems in the Pacific among our allies, South Korea and Japan, and then move ahead on sanctions to suppress not only the North Koreans' ability to threaten, but also to basically shut down their capability altogether. Would you agree?
Well, I think those programs would be part of a bigger strategy. But I think we also need to understand that all of that is not going to stop the threat. Even an anti-missile defense is not leak-proof. And so the danger will still be there of a North Korean nuclear attack, particularly if they continue to build up their missile arsenal and increase their nuclear stockpile. So we need a comprehensive strategy. And I've been saying this for a long time, as have others. And that strategy needs to include not only measures to protect ourselves, not only measures to put pressure on North Korea, but also starting a dialogue with Pyongyang to see if there are peaceful ways out of this confrontation. Otherwise, the problem is just going to continue to mount.
Joel, before we go, do you believe a North Korea-inspired or motivated nuclear event will happen in your lifetime?
I don't think North Korea is just going to, out of the blue, launch a missile against the United States or our allies in the region. The danger here is that escalating tensions could create a situation where miscalculation results in a second Korean War.
Will that happen in your lifetime?
I don't know at this point, honestly. I think the chances are increasing.
Joel Witt, senior fellow at the U.S. Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University and founder of the website 38north.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Could Guam become a ground zero? Do the people think about it, given their history so close to the nuclear attack that historians say ended World War II 72 years ago? Jefferson Cronin of KPRG Guam Public Radio joins us. Jefferson, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
A lot to think about, both in terms of then and now in Guam there. What are you thinking? And the people you talk to, what are they thinking?
We're kind of used to this on Guam. Of course, not the nuclear part, perhaps, but he threatens us regularly, actually. And so we're kind of used to it. Some people do get upset about it, but most people are not very upset about it because we're very well protected. About 2/3 of the island is a U.S. military base of one sort or another. So we're not really afraid of him. And it's something that especially the older folks here on Guam who went through World War II, and there are still a number of those people here who were captured by the Japanese during the war. You know, Guam is the only substantially populated U.S. soil ever conquered by a foreign power. And so these people are very defiant, and that sort of runs in the blood here.
Well, you also express a certain amount of wisdom in evaluating the rhetoric of Kim Jong-un and possibly even Donald Trump at this point. If you listen to talk radio here in the United States, there are a lot of commentators that are quite strident and loud and fearful sounding about attacks on Honolulu and San Francisco and the rest. Do you have anything to say to them?
Yeah, I'd say chill out, because this feeds the fire, and we don't really need that. We have about 170,000 people here on Guam, and in the Northern Marianas, there's another 30 or 40,000, our near neighbors. Most of the people around here that I've been talking to feel like replying to Kim Jong-un's rhetoric with more of the same is counterproductive and even dangerous.
Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, spoke about people should feel safe and not concern themselves, actually expressing some of what you just remarked about a moment ago. Would people in Guam say poor choice of words by the president yesterday? Is chill out advice maybe for the White House?
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. Like they're asking, why is he doing this? We understand that Kim Jong-un does these things as much for internal political reasons as anything else. He has to keep his power and he has to play the game internally. And so far, we've done pretty well by not playing his game.
Finally, Jefferson, this is a nuclear week. 72 years ago, the bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Does Guam commemorate that in any way? Think about that at all?
Not really. I mean, of course, it was just slightly to the north of us from Tinian, the island of Tinian, where those bombs took off. That's where the planes came from to drop the bombs on Japan. We have on Guam, we have a great relationship with Japan now. And we have a huge Japanese tourism industry here and many Japanese residents. So really, it's we don't really commemorate that. We just commemorate our liberation from when the Americans came back and took the island back from the Japanese during World War II. And that's the biggest holiday of the year on Guam.
Jefferson Cronin is a morning news host at KPRG, Guam Public Radio. Jefferson, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.